Good morning. I wish to greet you all in the name of Jesus. It's a beautiful fall morning, or nearly fall, outside. nearing the end of summer, it feels like. And it's a privilege we have to be here today, to meet together. Glad for the visitors as well. Hope that you can... I hope that you are benefited for being here. Hope that you can grow in your walk with God as well. that's the intention for those of us who aren't visitors. It's kind of interesting, and in a service like this, the way some parts of it get pieced together. In both the devotionals, well, what Dan just referred to, our mediator, our master, Christ, we talk about, there's a little cliche phrase that we run off on each other sometimes, or it's something that's used. The work of Christ on the cross, Hebrews 1, that term was, well, when he had by himself purged our sins, that's Hebrews 1, 3, that was Christ, the main thing he did. We refer to that as the work, his work. That stuck out to me because of what I was thinking about. Also in the first devotional, Brother John read some verses from either from Proverbs or Ecclesiastes that I had omitted, skipped, because I wasn't sure how it fit. But when John was giving them, they fit. We'll probably get back to that. But my thoughts to share with you this morning: the fall of the year, Labor Day. I guess I don't have much of a sermon title here other than Labor Day. I want to talk a little bit about that, about labor and what it means to the human experience, labor, what it is, what it represents to the Christian, to the non-Christian. And what started me thinking about this, or deciding to dig into it a little farther, was again when I found two, surfacing in my mind, felt like two opposing or two verses that seems to be in tension. Those verses, one of them being Ephesians 4:28, which is we pass over it kind of because it's addressed to the not so savory characters. Let him that stole. Well, come on, that's not me. I'm not a thief. So let's point that verse at someone else. Let him that stole steal no more. But it goes on into this term labor. But rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give. Surfacing on the other side of my mind was this phrase from John 6, words of Christ, labor not for the meat which perishes. So Christ said, labor not. Paul said, get to work. Which is it? And so, hence my thoughts... And that's been cruising around in my mind, probably partly brought on by this, by the holiday, Labor Day. What is Labor Day, and how does that fit into this question of whether or to what extent we should or shouldn't labor? June 28, 1894, Congress passed an act making the first Monday in September of each year a legal holiday in the District of Columbia and its territories. All right, so what's Labor Day? What is Labor Day commemorating, or what's the point? I had actually gone through some of that sitting in our house last night. I heard the question... That question was posed to my wife by one of our children. What's Labor Day? What does that mean? What's it for? What's it about? Well, it's not complicated. Labor Day, Congress passed that 130 years ago. It was a holiday that was observed locally by some cities or some districts. It was not a national holiday. And it was simply celebrating, simply giving recognition to the American worker. Nothing. The American laborer. Now, America in 1890, in the years prior to that, the Americans globally were known for what they were producing. The Industrial Revolution, steam engines, railroads, bridges. The American people were at the forefront or running close to with global technology. And credit was given to the workers, the ones who are putting out the sweat, making it happen. Well, that's just a little bit of the history that I found. I will admit it's kind of a relaxing thing to find a holiday that there's not some negative or pagan or some not so good connotation. It's just simply Labor Day, simply as that, just recognition to the working. To the working American. So, what about us? What about the Christians? Are we supposed to labor? Are we supposed to work? I'm going to use the term labor and work interchangeably. First, we're going to look at some of the Ephesians 4:28, that concept, work being something good, work being something that you're supposed to do. And then we'll move to the John 6:27. Where Jesus says, don't labor for me, and I'd like to take that passage apart a little bit and look at that and look at the point that Jesus was trying to make there in John 6. But first, labor. You know what that means? If I were to ask the boys over there what labor is or work is, do you know what I'm talking about? What's work? What's labor? If you were to write a dictionary definition, what would it be? I'll read it to you. I looked it up. Actually, I typed these out. But labor, it's what you thought. Labor is this: to exert one's body or mind strenuously, to work hard. To work, definition number two, to work for wages in production of goods or services, to move with great effort, or to pitch or roll heavily, as in the ship laboring in a rough sea. That's all. To work as a noun is the use of one's strength or ability to get something done or achieve a result. Labor or toil. So what does the word labor mean to you? If I were to ask by age group, just like I kind of was running through it in my mind, what is hard work? Schoolwork, is that hard? Is that labor? Schoolwork, labor, actually, it actually fits. The definition actually fits because labor can be, well, definition number one, it was to exert one's body or mind. So the exertion of the mind, it's fair to call that labor. Fair to call that work. School's about to start. I'll run one off on you school children. My younger siblings didn't like to hear this when I was at home, but there was one man in the church I went to who commonly referred to school as these children get tired at recess at school, but they get their recesses interrupted with rest periods. Get rested up for the next recess. School, one series of recesses and rest periods. What's not to like about that? Young boys, young girls, youth boys. What about you guys? You work, labor, punch the clock, get clocked in, be productive. That's what work is. Parents, fathers, mothers, what's your work? What's your labor? What is stressing you? The body, the physical work, the mind, the job of providing. Mothers, yes, you have a bunch of work to do, labor, the job of managing, trying to keep all of these interests and stresses and needs all being fulfilled. Old people, full adults, grandparents, what is your work? What is your labor? What does that look like? Just understand that we're told the work, labor, work, some of it's physical, some of it's more mental. Psalm 90, verse 10 says this, "The days of our years are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they be 80 years, or if it turns out that it's there are 80 years, yet is their strength, the strong part, or the permanent part of that, the part that just we don't get away from, is labor and sorrow. It is soon cut off, and we fly away. If by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength, labor and sorrow." So the psalmist, many years ago, knew and understand that. The years are hard. We need to toil. We need to sweat. We will experience gains. We will experience losses. Eventually, we start losing our capabilities physically. Eventually, Song of Solomon says that the grasshopper becomes a burden. With just a small thing can become heavy. But I believe this, that labor is part of the God-designed human experience. Garden of Eden, think about this. So Adam and Eve were placed in a garden. In a perfect world, they were told to dress it and to keep it. There was work for them to do. The fruit didn't just magically appear on the table, if they had a table. If they were going to have a table, they were going to have to cut a tree down and make a table. Labor was part of God's plan for the good of man. Now, after the fall, labor increased. I think that's also a fact. That work, probably some of the distastefulness was probably increased. The thorns, the thistles, the difficulty. I think that increased. How much labor should be required of me? Exodus 20, verses 9 through 11, the Ten Commandments. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. 6 days is what God said you should work. At least, don't be working the seventh day. Now, we live in a land where people think, people believe, I have lived my entire life this way, believing that I should be able to work for 5 days and do what I want on Saturday and rest on Sunday. Sound logical, boys? What if mandatory 12-hour, 6-day-a-week was asked of you? No, required of you. If that's what you needed to eat, it wouldn't exactly be a violation. Now, the fact of the matter is, we are privileged. In this land, we are privileged with being able to earn enough in a 5-day-week to eat, and eat quite well. Okay, we can also complain in this land about the tax rate and the people in this land who don't work. And there are lots of them. the welfare crowd. And I will admit it's annoying to me as well. Why should I have to work? Why should I have to work and pay a high tax rate while there's others not working? Now that is a very normal question, a fair enough question. And it's something that I suppose our sense of fairness, it should somewhat irritate us. Let's go to Ephesians 4:28, the verse that I started with, one of these verses in tension. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Now in that verse we have these concepts of working and having and giving. And true enough, there's something not very fair about that. In other words, if after you've worked for it and now you have it, why would you give it? There's a certain amount of logic to that. But just because you worked for it and just because you have it does not necessarily mean that you get to keep it. If you want to think fair, if you want to argue about fairness, I'll take you to the adult Sunday school class. Jesus, the adult Sunday school class, we're talking about Jesus' trial. When Jesus was headed for the cross in front of Pilate and then Herod and then heading out to an unjust death. Understand something, there was nothing fair about that. All right, I'll leave the fair part. Just some other sides to this, kind of for parents. Why should you teach your children to work? Why should you instill a work ethic, diligence? Proverbs. You can read lots of Proverbs that give you hints on that. He that is slothful in his work, this is Proverbs 18:9, is a brother to him that is a great waster. Romans 12, that's some practical teaching for the church. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love. In honor, preferring one another, not slothful in business. A work ethic is going to be needed there. Fervent in spirit, fervency, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of the saints. These are all projects for the Christians to be doing. Distributing to the necessity of the saints. Incidentally, that has to do with this thing of giving what I worked for. Given to hospitality. Hospitality, something that we are all called to. We say our homes should be hospitable. We should be welcoming people in and giving them a meal. Just understand, you're not going to be very hospitable if you don't have something to give. Those are all reasons that will point you, parents, point me to this project, this task of teaching the benefit of work. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10, whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might. There's no work, you've got a time of no work coming, but that's in the grave. Proverbs 21:25, the desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. New Testament again, 2 Thessalonians 3:10. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. So parents, all of us, be productive. Don't be found slothful. It's in the realm of work that we understand the cause and effect. A work ethic is prepares people to take responsibility later in life. And so that's kind of my pitch on that side, on the work. Be diligent. But can it be overdone? Or is there a danger there? I think it's fair to say that there is. There would be a ditch. Let's go to John 6. I'd like to read part of this chapter here. Let's go look at the phrase where Jesus said, "Labor not for the meat which perisheth." And isn't that what I've just been talking about? Working, not being slothful. If you don't work, you shouldn't eat. Jesus straight up told these people, "Labor not for the meat which perisheth." And I stopped there. The next two words is "but for." Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for the meat. In other words, he's trying to get them to switch, trying to get them to see another side. The context, the background here, John 6, it's the feeding of the 5,000. Verse 12, they gathered up the fragments. This is after a large group had eaten. And I would say this, they had eaten with none of them having appropriately worked in the way we look at life. It was a miracle. They showed up. It wasn't just a wedding meal for 500 here. It was a meal that fed 5,000. And so these people actually had seen something. They had seen an anomaly. They had seen something happen that doesn't normally happen. And if this was going to be the new normal, they wanted a part of it. Verse 15, "When Jesus therefore perceived that they would come and take him by force to make him a king, he departed again into a mountain himself alone. And when even was now come, his disciples went down unto the sea, entered into a ship, went over the sea toward Capernaum." The one writer I read said this was well, verse 19, they rode 25 or 30 furlongs, 4 miles. They were 4 miles out. Those of you who've been in a boat know about what 4 miles on the water looks like. They were out quite a ways when Jesus came by. Anyway, they got to the other side of the lake. Verse 24, there was a night involved here. The previous day they had seen themselves fed. Verse 24, "When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they also took shipping and came to Capernaum seeking for Jesus. And when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, Rabbi, when camest thou hither? Jesus answered them and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye seek me not because ye saw the miracles, but because ye did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you. For him hath God the Father sealed. Then said they unto him, What shall we do, that we might work the works of God? Jesus answered and said unto them, This is the work of God, that ye believe on him whom he hath sent. They said therefore unto him, What sign showest thou then, that we may see and believe thee? Or what dost thou work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, He gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore give us this bread. And Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you, that ye also have seen me, and believe not. All that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will, which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that every one which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. Jesus' words, talking about himself. And I found it interesting here that the word labor was used. That's how it was translated here. Or to work. Labor not for the meat which perisheth. Verse 26, Jesus got pretty direct with them. You're coming here not because you want me, but because you ate. That's why you're here. But labor not for that meat. Don't work so hard. Don't figure out how to get to the other side of the lake or boat your way across the sea just for the next meal. But labor for the meat which endureth unto everlasting life. In other words, go ahead and work hard at believing. You folks worked hard enough at trying to get more physical food. Now put that amount of labor into the spiritual bread that you need. I think that's what he was trying to get them to understand. Remember the definition of labor: to work, to exert one's body or mind strenuously. And I think this required of them, and it requires of us, for us to believe, to accept Christ, to become a Christian. That actually takes some strenuous mind work. It actually is labor. It is not an easy thing. Verse 28, these people indicated that they were up to the task. What shall we do that we might work the works of God? They were getting with the program. They were ready to go. Verse 29, the work of God is to believe. Believe on him that God has sent. The next question seems fairly valid. Well, who? How do we figure out who, where, when? The reality is, these folks had more reason to ask those questions in some ways than we do. They were living before the resurrection. Christ had not yet died. We look at the account of Jesus Christ, while they saw him physically, we say they would have had it easier because they got to see the miracles, but they didn't know that there was a resurrection coming. That's where we have an advantage. I was thinking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Jesus on his way to the cross talked about that. You know, don't weep for your daughters of Jerusalem, weep for your children. They were going to have to see, they were going to live through the destruction of the place where they were supposed to worship God. We have this information. We know this. So why is it difficult? I was thinking about that. Why is it difficult for us to, we use the term become a Christian, but it's actually to believe. To believe on Jesus. Matthew 11, Jesus invites people, says this, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." There are words of Christ, and he's quickly moving from the laboring, the heavy laden. And I think this he's talking about not physical labor here, but the mental strain, the mental difficulty. But finally, to believe on Christ requires some mental labor. To believe on Christ, to accept Christ, to become a Christian, this thing of self-denial, it's a control issue. Self-denial becomes part of the equation. We have to give up our selfish wishes, our selfish desires. Take up the cross daily. Other words of Christ. To believe on Christ, to be His friend. Ye are my... John 15:14. Ye are my friends, if ye do whatsoever I command you. Scant three verses later. These things I command you, that ye love one another. If ye were of... This is two more verses later. John 15:19. If ye were of the world, the world would love his own. But because ye are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Those are some of the reasons why it's difficult for us. Because we know, we understand that to cast one's lot in with Christ puts you at enmity with a lot of the thinking of the age of the world. The popular thinking says, get all you can and keep it, hoard it. If you can get on welfare and food stamps and not need to bother working, why should you not do that? That's what the world's program and system is peddling, is teaching people. God's way is indeed different. In honor preferring one another. Work work to have to give. That's Ephesians 4:28. Hebrews 4, there's another, in closing here, I'd like to read a passage. Actually, yeah, it's a half a chapter. If Hebrews 4, Dan read from Hebrews 1, this writer talking about this better way, this neater thing, this improved redemption method, let's call it. I don't quite like those terms. The book of the better things. Hebrews 4, beginning with verse 9. Talking about the rest. recesses and rest periods. The rest that the Christian is looking for is the rest that comes at the end of life. Because we understand that here in this world, there here in the 70 or 80 or 90 years that we're given to live, we have to remain productive. We have to work. We have to labor, both physically and labor mentally, labor spiritually. But there's a rest coming. There remaineth, therefore, this is verse 9 of Hebrews 4, there remaineth, therefore, a rest to the people of God. For he that has entered into his rest, he also hath ceased from his own works, as God did from his. Let us labor, therefore, to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief. For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit, and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and opened unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Almost like we jump through various subjects in that four or five or six verses there. We're to enter into the rest. Work hard to enter into the rest. Verse 14 talks a little bit about the Word of God. God can see, God knows. Verse 14, hold fast. Let us hold fast our profession. That does not bring up in my mind easy street. Hold fast our profession gives the idea that you're going to have to put some effort into maintaining what you have, your way of life, your beliefs. Come boldly. Verse 16, let us therefore come boldly. Those all have within them action on our part. And that's part of our labor. That's part of our work. That's part of what we need to do. So those are the thoughts I have for you. I'd just like you to remember that labor is required to get to live. To live on earth. Labor is required to live and to give. You're not going to be able to give without having first acquired, which means you needed to work. Labor is required to believe. Then that's the mental labor. That's the mind. That's the part that we go on with. Regardless of the labor that the physical labors that our bodies can or can't do, the mental labor requiring the labor needed to believe and to follow Christ. That one is broad. That's huge. But remember, that's part of what you need to. That's a labor. And that one morphs right into the labor required to enter into the promised rest. That is our desire. Sorry, Eric. Song number 499, I would like to sing. I had that written down. Why don't you come up and lead it for us? Church hymnal, 499. Go labor on.
Number 499.